Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
January 9th, 2015, you're listening to the original PokerCast. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We are the original PokerCast.
Are we? I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, well, we the Lord Admiral didn't call themselves a PokerCast. We were the first to call ourselves a PokerCast, so we are the original PokerCast.
Yeah. Okay.
We may not be the original Poker Podcast, but we are the original PokerCast. So, how are things going with you? Have you thawed out? Yeah, although it is pretty cold today here in Florida.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the only reason I'm not freezing my baguettes off today here in Florida is because I just got back from the Arctic winterland of Wisconsin and Illinois. So my body had time to prep for this god-awful 40-degree weather that we're in the middle of right now.
Right.
But, yeah, I had a great trip up there. And so you never know when you're going to run into Ante Up fans, right?
Right. The Ante Up Nation is vast.
Certainly. When you go to poker room, I expect to see people, blah, 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 because it's poker, right?
Right.
But, you know, we vacationed with Poker Geek and Nuance and their wives. And on New Year's Day, we went to see Second City, you know, the big comedy improv group based in Chicago. And which was show, and as we were after the show, we were in the coat check line, right?
Right.
Which I think is hilarious because I've never seen a coat check line here in Florida.
No coats. Coats here, right? That's right.
All right, so we're in this line, right? And all of a sudden, this guy walks up to Geek and Nuance and is like, "Oh my gosh, do you guys work for Ante Up?" Because they both had Ante Up stuff on. Of course, I'm the owner of the company. I had no Ante Up stuff on at all. And of course, people said, "Well, yeah, I'm a columnist." And Nuance said, "No, I'm just listening to the show." And he's like, "Oh man, I'm from Florida. I just played an event down at the Hard Rock last week. It's great to see you guys here." And I was like, "Oh, far away," so I didn't get part of the conversation. But they filled me in later. But that's kind of cool, right? Just in the middle of Second City.
Absolutely.
Some guy just, hey, and he's from Florida too.
That reminds me.
So I was the only idiot that went north for the winter.
Yeah, I think I went to Connecticut once for something, and it was in a Walmart. Some guy recognized me as the publisher of the magazine or something. I was like, "What?" I mean, because I had my Ante Up shirt on too. But he was like, "I was like, what? It's just crazy. Sometimes you forget, you know, that it's, you know, poker's a popular thing, and people read the magazine and listen to the show, and you know, sometimes you know, I just want to be like normal people."
Well, you should. I would avoid going to Walmart then, if you want to be.
Yeah, I know. I forget.
Or the normal people.
We're huge in Walmart. Speaking of being huge.
Oh, man, yes. Very excited. The American Poker Awards coming up next month.
Yep.
And we talked about this a little bit on the show before. It's one of these new initiatives from Alex Dreyfus, who's just lighting the poker world on fire with all kinds of great ideas. And they've had them in Europe forever, so I know our European listeners are yawning right now. Oh, we've had the European Poker Awards for 7 years or whatever, right? But this is the first time in America we're having the American Poker Awards. It's going to be given away in Beverly Hills on February 27th. And as we mentioned before, the some of them are going to be based on the ranking systems that Global Poker Index has.
Right.
And then one's going to be completely chosen by the jury that's being formed. But the rest are going to be, there's a nomination panel that's going to make the nominations, and then the jury's going to actually pick the awards. And gosh darn it, how cool is it that I get to be on the nomination panel?
I thought you said he had great ideas.
Yeah, well, you know,
Asking it's you a very to be big on that panel, is not a good
so
idea.
So he probably, you know, exactly. I was probably like one of the last people. He's like, I guess I'll put that Skywalker guy.
You're like one granule of sugar in a huge gallon-sized cup of coffee. That's how important you are. But hey, it's still an honor. And no, of course, this is an awesome thing. Of course, I don't know why he chose you. You have nothing to do with the magazine. You're just a figurehead.
No, of course not. Yeah,
you're just a figurehead. I'm the one that's in the trenches. I'm the one that pays attention to it on TV and edits a magazine. But it's all right. You can make decisions for us. So I'll let you go. Don't worry about it.
Hey, I'm just not comfortable being in the trenches. It's, you know, I'm more of a above the trench kind of guy.
I know. You're hoity-toity. You don't want to get don't want to get your skirt dirty. But this is really cool. I mean, so we're gonna incorporate the Anti-Up Nation in this. We're not just gonna leave it to ourselves. We know that everyone else has opinions, and they also are just as informed as we are. That's why they're listening to us and reading our magazine. So we're gonna open it up to them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. To me, this isn't an honor just for us. It's an honor for the entire Anti-Up Nation because, you know, I want everybody to help us decide who we should nominate, and we get to nominate two people in each of the categories, or two things, or whatever it is. Some of them are events, some people. So I actually this morning set up a website on our antiupmagazine.com, so let's go to antiupmagazine.com/nominate, and you can fill out a little form there with your choices for the awards that that will be preceded by the nominations. And let me know who you think. You know, I'm on the road a lot, and I see a lot, but I don't see everything. So it'd be really nice to have a lot of the Anti-Up Nation let us know. And that makes you a part of the awards as well, too.
And do it quickly, right? Because don't they want to turn this around pretty fairly quickly, don't they?
Yeah, I have to submit my nominations by February 1st. So we have less than a month now. So don't dawdle.
Don't dawdle.
So those of you listening to the show 7 years from now, you're probably a little late.
Yeah, don't forget it was 2015.
You're listening right now. Yeah. If you're listening right now, go to antiupmagazine.com/nominate and fill out the form. Let us know, and I'll look forward to see what the nation wants.
Yeah, and not to extend the show too much longer for this, but you know, we wrote a little publisher's column about it for our February issue because I think it's a big deal. I think it's trying to not really legitimize us, but bringing us into the same kind of entertainment industry. Poker's entertainment. It's also a competition. It really is, and. This is the kind of stuff that puts you in the households, you know what I mean? Like red carpet, like what are you wearing? Who are you wearing? You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, they're really trying to make it, you know, the award season, they're doing the same time as like the Oscars and all these things, doing red carpet, doing it in LA, and it's a cool thing to have. And I don't want to go too far as saying legitimizes the sport, but it certainly helps it.
Well, this is certainly the whole goal of Alex Dreyfus, and if folks aren't familiar with him, definitely Google him and get to know him because truly, truly innovator, and really gets the fact that he, you know, how much time do we spend on the show talking about how poker gets a bad rap?
Yeah.
It's for a lot of people, we still think it's played in dark, dangerous alleys or casinos. And Alex's big goal for the last couple of years is to really bring it out of that and make it mainstream. And, you know, his big thing now is Sportify poker. And so he's doing some initiatives along that line. And he just created the Poker World Cup too, which is another cool thing he's doing. And this is just another one of those things. And you know, we talked about this before on the show, but you know, he was very adamant about having the award ceremony in Beverly Hills and not in Las Vegas, right, where people would assume it would be. See, again, just trying to make poker mainstream. So he's doing a lot of good things. So I'm glad to be a part of it, and glad all entire Anti-Up Nation's part of it.
Excellent.
All right, so you know, we did the Conkeys last week, right?
Yes.
Always a highlight of the year for us, right?
Yeah.
And you're gonna have to help me remember, although I can't imagine I'll forget this, but because I've got an early nomination for the 2015 Conkeys. okay, so here's the thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, it's just that it's funny because it almost sounds like this is new to you, but I've seen this like a lot. So it's funny.
Yeah,
to me,
see, it's absolutely new to me.
I know. I've seen this a ton of times. But go ahead.
So I'm sure a lot of our listeners have probably seen this too. But apparently, there's this thing called bull poker. And as I wrote here, a bunch of guys with more money than sense sit around a poker table in the middle of a bull ring that, yes, wait for it, has a live bull running around in it. apparently the last player left there wins. So the reason that we're talking about now is that I believe it was in Oregon, but a couple weeks ago, one of these brain surgeons was rushed to the hospital after the bull separated his femur from its hip. Been a lot of tough poker games, but I've never been in one where I've separated my femur from my hip.
Yeah, you don't play poker in the underground. That's why. That's the problem.
It's not used to being in the trenches like you.
No, but I have seen this. A lot of times you see it where the clowns do it, but I've seen it where guys do it too. They have the cowboys dressed up and go out there and they sit at the table in the dirt.
I'm going to go ahead and say that, regardless of who you are, you're a clown. If you're doing this, so.
And a lot of times you see it on those video blooper shows and stuff like that, or you see it on the bull riding shows.
I'm sure
or something
we'll see
like
this
that.
One on the blooper show.
Yeah, I mean, it's hilarious. But that's what they do. They got to sit there with fake cards, and they just sit there and they play, and they sit and deal things out and fool around until the bull scares, you know, the bejeebers out of every single guy sitting there until the last one's still sitting, and then he wins. Whatever it is, he wins. Sometimes he just, you know, wins the fact that he's living. I don't know, but yeah, I've seen this a lot. I guess the guy getting injured pretty seriously is what makes it news, but this is not anything new when it comes to bull poker, man. I can't believe I've heard of it.
Here's my question, then. Since you apparently are the bull poker expert of Andy Up now, how does this not happen more often?
I know. They get scared. Plus, a lot of them are, like I said, a lot of them are the clowns, so they're prepared for it. They know when it's coming, or they get up, or they're padded, or whatever it is. So, and I don't think
they
got to
fix it with bull.
Well, I mean, sometimes the bull's got like their horns taped and stuff too. I don't know if they're actually getting any fear.
Oh, yeah, that's gonna keep my femur on my hip.
No, I know. Clearly, you got hit pretty hard.
Scotch tape on the bull's horn.
But these guys, man, they stick it out too. I tell you, you go to YouTube. I bet you could find some instances of these guys sticking it out pretty long and getting hit hard. But yeah, it's hilarious to me. I mean, I think when we play poker with Vaso, he'd be considered a bull, but he wouldn't get up around and start headbutting us either. So.
Nobody can throw a card right into our forehead.
That's right. You can throw a card. Into See, there's an injury. Yep. Unbelievable.
Wow. Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, I do dangerous stuff. I don't do anything this dangerous, so I'm not going to be overly critical here. And I have all the respect in the world for bull riders. I get that, even though that's dangerous. But it just seems like this is an unnecessary thing.
Yeah, no, and it's just like anything else. And you go to a race to see cars crash. You go to a hockey game to watch guys fight. People go to the bull riding to see people get gouged, you know. They get them, see their butts get whipped, so this is only adds to the drama, I guess.
Well, I guess the difference between this and NASCAR. NASCAR, there's an actual race going on. I mean, yeah, you're right. Everybody wants to see a crash, right? But there's an actual race to watch until somebody crashes, right? I can't imagine this being exciting just watch a bunch of knuckleheads out there playing cards while this bull circles them. It seems to me that the only thing that makes this exciting is the guy, the femur gets separated from his hip. If that doesn't happen, I would be walking out, hey, man, I want my $20 back.
Hey, come on. I mean, that's pretty cool. You're watching these four, five, six guys sitting around a table and just daring this bull to gouge them. I mean, see how long they have the cojones to sit there. And that's kind of entertaining, whether he gets injured or not. No?
See, we need to get Henry Ornstein on this and put a lipstick camera on the bull or something, right?
Lipstick camera on the bull. Yeah, one of those GoPros, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I love those GoPro videos when they put them on animals and the animals climb up trees and stuff. That's hilarious. And get all sick to the stomach and everything. Like, oh, my God, I'm going to get nauseous. That's what we should do.
Bull poker, things that I just didn't know existed. Yeah. And I wish they...
You can never unsee it once you see it, too. That's the thing.
And you know, we got one of our listeners out there who's like, oh, man, I'll play that every week. And we're home game. We listen to the Andy Up podcast. We're out there waiting for the bowl.
Well, I thought you said you didn't like to do anything dangerous, but apparently you do because we're having another California cruise. You're going out on the West Coast. It's crazy. You're going to get on a big ship.
Like you are.
Well, yeah, because I'm not going. You're getting on a big ship.
Yes, very excited. We've just announced yet another Antia Poker Cruise. As you mentioned, this one's out of Los Angeles again. We did one this year, right? March?
Yes.
So we're going to do it again almost a year from today, January 24th, 2016, so not in a couple weeks.
Yes.
We have plenty of time to book.
Yes.
Next year, 2016.
Yes, but if you want to book now, we'll take your name. Sorry.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but, you know, always looking to get as many people on this cruise. That's right. That's right. Get us your name right now.
It's going to be on the recently revitalized NCL Jewel. So those of us, those of you that joined us last time, was on the Star, which is one of their smaller, older ships. So this is a much bigger, nicer ship, the NCL Jewel. And just like last time, it's going to make three stops in the Mexican Riviera: Cabo St. Lucas, where you can hang out with Sammy Hagar; Mazatlan, where you can hang out with no one; and Puerto Vallarta, where you can hang out with a bunch of other pretty people. Rates start at.
Say that again. I want to hear you say those towns again.
Cabo St. Lucas.
Okay.
Mazatlan.
Okay.
Puerto Vallarta.
I'm clapping. This is hilarious. I love listening to a guy.
I
love listening to a guy from Ohio try to pronounce Mexican cities. It's hilarious. Oh, man. A Vallarta. Vallarta, Scott. Vallarta.
What?
Vallarta. And every time you say Mazatlan or whatever it is you say, I always think of...
Mazatlan.
I always think of Mazeltov. I don't know why, for some reason, I always think of that, too. But, oh, man. All right, so go ahead. Tell them all about this awesome cruise.
No one says it the way you do it on the cruise ship, because everybody said Vallarta when I was on the cruise.
Well, they're all wrong. Every one of them.
If everybody's wrong, that means everybody is right. Except for you. All right, anyhow.
Okay.
Rates start at $7.99 per person based on double occupancy. And definitely looking forward to seeing lots of our West Coast listeners join us on this one. We get a ton of emails from California and didn't get a lot of them on the last cruise. So
yeah, what's the
hopefully
deal?
This one is a better time of year and we'll get you out of there. More details on this sailing as well as our upcoming February 9th sailing out of Port Canaveral. Still booking people for that. And the looming January 17th deadline for our April 10th sailing out of Baltimore. All that information can be found at antiupcruises.com. And if you're thinking about joining us on Baltimore, definitely book soon, because we've been told by Royal Caribbean that once that deadline expires, there ain't no more inside staterooms available.
Yeah, that's going to be a busy cruise, so we're not going to get that price back. So book it now if you're definitely going. Oh, and don't forget that January 19th, right around the corner, is our Restock the Shelves Food Bank Initiative with Blue Shark Optics. More than 20 poker venues now across North America are participating, and we need volunteers for Team Annie Up at many of those events, as well as volunteers to help set up events anywhere poker is played. For more information, visit AnnieUpMagazine.com/restock. Latest additions are Isle Casino Bettendorf in Iowa, and three Canada locations: Orangeville Poker Tour, Cool Mule Poker, and Georgetown Poker. Plus, many venues have updated information, including chip bonuses for making a donation. So, very exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's coming together. I got a couple more emails right before the show, too, from some other properties. So, we'll be hopefully adding some more here in the next week or so. But please, if you're anywhere near any of these events, come out and support them. Bring some canned food or some cash. All those donations stay right in your local area. They're all benefiting local food banks. And if you can't get into live ones, we have two online tournaments going on, one in Hogwild Poker, the other one at advancedpokertraining.com. So wherever you are in the world, you can participate and restock the shelves. And this has really turned out to be a good event. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, very nice. I'm glad to see people stepping up like this. Okay, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of AnnieUp. Check out J-Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. Comes from Brian Taylor. Said he started reading Small Stakes Hold'em by Ed Miller and David Sklansky. I read that too. I think I gave you that book. Did I give you that book?
Yeah, I think I still have it. Yeah, I think absolutely.
Without going into the multitude of hands and variations he mentions, I'll cite one example and let me know if you agree with his theory. It says, open with these offsuit hands, ace-king, ace-queen, ace-jack, king-queen. From any position, raise these hands if it's not been raised. Beware if someone raises in front of you as you are vulnerable to domination, so be prepared to fold these offsuit hands, with the exception of ace-king and ace-queen, when you've been raised. The book was published in 2005, which is not new, but not that old in comparison to some of the older publications. Since this is the hoodie era, and college kids are going all in with off-suited junk beyond belief, I am wondering whether Sklansky's theories are still valid in this day and age, or should I throw it out the window? Go ahead, you go first.
I love this question.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll say this, that the example he posed, I think, is fairly solid. Though I've been known to fold ace queen to a race now because I've got sick of being dominated by ace king.
Yeah.
But I think that's pretty pretty basic solid. I mean, obviously, there's always that it depends, right? And that's where you have to, your poker experience comes in, where you get away from that. But I'll say this, the Sklansky's theory of poker is still one of the most well respected poker books out there, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to change. So, but that's theory of poker, so that's a different kind of thing.
Right.
When you get into strategy, I would think the game has changed quite a bit here in 9 years. So I think there's probably still stuff of value in there, but the game has changed. So, you know, I would say any of these books that you read, when you read them, you have to apply the overall idea to your game and adjust with how people play. You know, I think if you're reading any book and you go out and try to play exactly like the book tells you to, then you're in danger of losing your stack. But that's not what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to just help you recognize different plays and things like that and then adjust to the surroundings.
I totally agree. Here's the deal. If it was published in 2005, that means it was published during and after the boom. So I don't think that this is not, you know, I don't think it doesn't hold up. I think it holds up pretty well. Think about it for a minute. If you had ace king, ace queen, ace jack, king queen, no one raised, and it got to you, would you raise with that hand? I would. I mean, I would.
Sure.
And small stakes hold them too. You know what I mean?
It's an excellent point. Yeah.
You know, so you combine those things, and that's absolutely sound advice. And then he's telling you, hey, beware if someone raises after you. You know, and someone raised before you, you probably want to consider playing, you know, be careful playing those hands if they raised before you. You want to be careful calling or re-raising with them. It's not that there aren't players out there who are aggressive, but players were aggressive in 2005 too. So, I think it holds up. I really do. I mean, I'm not saying, and you're absolutely right, a book that's written in 2015, when you read it, you're still going to have to adjust. Everything, it still depends. Doesn't matter that there's crazy hoodie kids out there now. Everything still depends. It depended in 2005. It depended in 75 whenever that other book was written by that Doyle guy. So, you know, 77, 78, whatever. So, I mean, that's pretty much that's poker in a nutshell. It all depends. But, yes, I think this is solid. I still think that's a solid way to go into small stakes hold'em with those cards.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up the small stakes part of it because I think people get a little confused, you know, when you're watching how the pros play on TV and forget that those pros don't play the 1-2 no limit games.
Right.
And, you know, those games are vastly different than what you see on TV. I'm not saying there's not very sophisticated players playing 1-2, but for the most part, you know, a good, solid ABC game and small stakes hold'em, you're going to do all right. You know, you don't have to get as crafty in small stakes games as you do if you enter a World Series event where you're going to have to bring your A game. But, I mean, you could play quote unquote by the book in small stakes and do all right. So,
yeah, how many times have you sat down at a small stakes no limit hold'em table and seen four bets before the flop? Never.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless it's kings versus aces, it's never. And even then, it usually gets all in before that point anyway. So. Really, you're not worried about these hoodie-era college kids going all in with offsuit junk. It's just not happening at small stakes, no limit hold'em. It's just not. Not like that, at least.
If it is, they don't know what they're doing with it. So.
Yeah.
Versus the college kid hoodie pros that absolutely know what they're doing.
Right.
They go all in with offsuit junk. So. Excellent.
All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or your home game, and you're not sure what that proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the AntiUp logo version, and use code ANTIUP for free shipping. This comes from Brad Foy. He says, I was recently playing in a $30 no-limit hold'em tournament at my local casino. We were on the money bubble with six people at my table. I was sitting in seat one as the small blind with blinds at 4,000, 8,000, and having only barely enough to cover the blind with 5,000. Seat 2 is in the big blind, seat 4 is first to act folds. Seat 7 also folds, but does so by flicking his hold cards with his index finger in aggressive frustration. One of his cards slides across the table like a Gretzky slapshot. Boy, he's really aging himself there. And comes to rest underneath my fingers. If you said Gordie Howe, I would have really fell off my chair.
Absolutely.
And his fingers that were lightly resting on his hole cards, creating a loose pile of three cards. I don't know if three constitutes a pile, but we'll get back to that later. Million to one shot, he says. I don't know about that either, but this guy's got a flair for the dramatic. The floor was immediately called. I told the floor I could identify my two cards, which were the seven of hearts, eight of hearts. And seat seven also said he could name his exact two hole cards. I was unable to determine which card was not mine with them face down, but the dealer chimed in saying he knows which of the cards was the intruder. The floor asks the dealer if he is sure. The dealer confirms, so the floor orders him to put that card in the muck and proceed. He pulls what he thinks is the right card out of the muck, or out of it, and mucks it. I look at the remaining two cards and now have the seven of hearts and the three of clubs. I told the floor he took the wrong card. So the floor declares my hand dead, and I was forced to forfeit my small blind, leaving me with one measly chip. Why couldn't seat seven have privately told the floor his two cards so that he could confirm the dealer was mucking the correct card before proceeding? I could have done the same. My other suggestion was that since there was not significant action before this event, why not have everyone throw them in as dead hand? The floor's final response to me was that it is my responsibility to protect my hand, and I didn't do so adequately.
Here's what Sam says. He says, there are many rules in poker, and yes, it is up to the player to protect their hand. However, I feel there are times when we as floor can garner extra information to come up with a better conclusion. This is one of those times. I would have asked the seven seat to step away from the table and inform me of their hold cards, and then as long as one of the cards they told me was incorporated in the three, I would have removed it and continued on with play. In regards to your significant action question, you have not given enough information for me to determine if there was or wasn't significant action. If three players have folded, or there are two actions that occurred involving chips, then the hand must be played.
100% agree. I can't disagree.
Yeah, I think this is interesting because, you know, we've had a couple different people do call the floor for us over the course of our PokerCast career, right?
Right.
And Jody was a starch opponent of the whisper in my ear solution to these problems.
Right.
Sam obviously is not, and I think you can go both ways on that. But certainly, you know, one of the things that I love about Sam is he really uses that TDA rule number one, which is, you know, do the best thing in best interest of the game.
Right.
And here you've got three cards. It's very easy for you, the floor, to ask seven, see what it is, and then make sure that action plays the way it should have. You know, we've been getting a lot of these questions on protecting your hand, and I think this is one of those tough things because, really, what is the standard for protecting your hand?
Exactly. You know, I was just thinking about that.
Do you have to, do you have to hire two bodyguards to, actually sit on your cards so some ash jack across the table doesn't Gretzky his cards into yours?
Yeah, you got to
take... At some point...
I was going to say, you got to take lessons from Martin Brodeur.
Yeah, ridiculous, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be the...
Whoever the hell that is, but...
Martin Brodeur, the goalie for the Devils, who just retired and then came out of retirement.
Yeah, I know.
The greatest goalie of all time.
I know about as little as hockey as anybody on the planet.
Come on, you're from Ohio.
Play hockey in Ohio. Football.
I know. But you're absolutely right, though. I mean, his hand was on the cards. What do you expect him to do? Turn around and sit on his cards? I mean... Come on, there's got to be a better solution. You know, sometimes people are just in a hurry. You know, to just, all right, four, yeah, you should protect your cards. No, he was protecting them. Just because, you know what I mean? You can put your hand on your cards and not expect other cards to be flung at them, you know?
Yeah, I think that should be the standard. I don't think there is a standard, but I think that should be the standard that, you know, it's your responsibility to protect your hand against normal things that happen at the poker table, right?
Right.
You know, so if you're just leaving your cards all willy-nilly out there where you turn around to eat a hamburger and the dealer picks them up, then you didn't protect your hand, right? Because that's what happens. But when you got people slap-shotting their cards across because they're Deutsche Banks, that's not something you expect to see at the table. And that should be the guy who's slap-shotting them across the table's problem, not yours.
Right.
And But, then you get into all kinds of different scenarios. But again, that's why we have a floor. That's why you always call a floor. And that's why the floor has the, the power to come over and make the best decision for the interest of the game. And it may not be, deviate somewhat from an established rule because of what's going on at that time. But
I agree.
But yeah, so definitely protect your hand, but also I really don't think you need to protect against, if a tornado comes to the poker room, you gotta be able to hold your cards down to a cat five.
I know.
Actually, that's a hurricane, but
hey,
I don't know the tornado rating scale. But
speaking of a tornado, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. All right, we're going to refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated at a very weak 1-2 No Limit Hold'em cash game. The action can get pretty wild, lots of players liking to limp and call raises pre-flop. We are far and away one of the best players at this game, which has a mix of uber-aggressive maniacs and timid calling stations. Because of this, we have grown an extremely healthy stack. We start this hand with about 630, more than tripling our initial $200 buy-in. There are 9 players at the table. The blinds post, under the gun calls, MP2 calls, hijack calls, and we're in the cutoff with the ace of diamonds, king of hearts. Well, even though this table is pretty crazy, we're going to make a raise. With so many limpers, we take our standard raise of $8 and bump it up to $14. The button folds, but we get 3 callers, the big blind, the under the gun, and the hijack. Ugh. At least we have position. There's $55 in the pot, and the flop comes down the ace of clubs, queen of diamonds, jack of clubs. The big blind and under the gun check, but the hijack puts $28 into the $55 pot. A little more than half the pot. This player is one of these aggressive maniacs. He started the hand with about 240. He can be too aggressive, and a lot of the time, it costs him. He likes to chase draws, but has been known to roll over a monster now and then. He could very well have King 10 here, but he could also have some kind of a draw. Although something like King 10 or a set is unlikely in that he loves to set traps. He rarely bets his big made hands. I think this is the perfect time to find out where we're at. We make it $65 to go. The other two players get out of the way, and our opponent wastes little time in shoving his remaining 161. What do we do here?
King 10 is very likely in the spot, but as are some two-pair hands. But O'Malley seems to be painting a picture of a loose cannon type of player here, right? So I think I'm inclined to use my stack to my advantage and make what I would take a loose call here.
Yeah, I agree. I think I call, but because it really feels like he's on a draw, too. I mean, from what I've been told about him in the situation, it seems like it's a Cosenza move where you just shove on a draw and hope the other guy folds. And if I'm wrong, I mean, we saw his stack, right? We clearly can outplay this table to get that money back if we're wrong. So I don't think it's going to be too much of a damage to our stack.
That's actually a very good point.
Yeah, so that's pretty easy. Let's see what happens.
Hello again. What hands could he have that might beat us? Again, I doubt this is King 10 or a set. If he'd had queens, jacks, or aces preflop, we probably would have got into a raising war, and he would have tried to get us to put our stack in. If he had King 10, he would most likely be laying a trap for us. Again, most likely. It's possible he has something like Ace-Queen or Ace-Jack, maybe even Queen-Jack. However, he probably would have raised with any big ace preflop before it got to us. Honestly, it seems like we might be good here. Maybe I'm grasping at straws. Is it possible he could have something like King 9 of clubs or 10-9 of clubs? Call me crazy, but I think we beat a lot more of his potential hands than what we're behind. And we do still have some outs if we're behind two pair. The hands that have us crushed just don't seem all that likely to me. We call, and soon find out we were giving him way too much credit. He laughs and turns over the 5 of clubs, tray of clubs. The turn and river blank out, and we take down a healthy pot. Perhaps we should walk away. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying you better have guts if you're going to play against maniacs like this. Otherwise, you're going to get run over. I hope to see you on the field.
I think the mistake our opponent made was not paying attention to our stack size. Because, again, that was the number one reason I decided to make the call. You know, I'd been shorter in chips. The call means more, especially in a tournament. This is a cash game, obviously, but in a tournament it makes a big deal.
Yeah.
But that's why I think it's important to know stack sizes when bluffing. I think a lot of people do that. If you feel like they have to bluff, right? That came up in our roundtable in the last cruise. You're like, you know, hey, I just don't know how to bluff. I need to work on bluffing. And, you know, I think my answer at that point is, you know, if you're playing in these bar league tournaments like he was, or even 1-2 the limit, you know, you don't need to bluff as much as you might think you have to. It's not that big part of the game, but eventually, you know, people feel like they have to do it, and then they bluff in wrong places or wrong situations, and, you know, this is one of those wrong situations, you know. It was very tough for us to fold here, I think, our stack size versus the bluffer stack size. And they just made a bad bluff, I think, at that point.
Well, first I want to say that it feels good to get it right. Because you never know. You know, it just ensures that you're not completely an idiot when it comes to this game. And I agree with you that these bluffs, when they try to make them, it doesn't occur to have to. See, most of these people, it doesn't occur to them to bluff until it's too late. And then they don't realize that at that point they haven't told a good story, or that the stack size over there is too big to not fold, or, you know, whatever, too much money in the middle. They don't think of all these things. When you're going to bluff somebody, you should be thinking about it like as the cards are being dealt to you, or at least when the situation is setting itself up early in the hand, you know. And it's not, a bluffing isn't like a last ditch effort, you know what I mean? It's an art. It's right. Something that has to be set up and told, and a lot of, you know, in this case, there's no way. This guy wasn't bluffing, by the way. He was semi-bluffing because he had
semi-bluffing. Yeah.
But still, there's no way you're gonna fold if you have a decent hand here for that amount of money when you clearly are crushing the table, tripling your buy-in, and you know, it there's too many hands that he beats here to fold, and even if he was wrong, he was still gonna be able to be ahead and probably still beat this table. So you got to think about all these things. This is the best player at the table right now, apparently. And don't bluff him, or don't, you know, I mean, don't shove all in on him, you know. I mean, you know, this guy, like I said, he was semi-bluffing, but that's not the point. The point we're talking about is actual bluffing, and I wouldn't bluff O'Malley in this situation.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, he started the betting in this round, right? He started the betting, and then we raised. So the funny thing is that if the flush got there, he wasn't playing it like it was a flush already,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, why, you didn't need to do the semi-bluff here. You can call the O'Malley's raise to 65, and then if the flush gets there, then you probably still got a chance of getting paid off on it. So, yeah. I mean, that's the reason you semi-bluff with that, is because you're worried that you're not going to get paid off with it, because you're playing it like you have a draw. But he didn't play this like he had a draw, I didn't think. So
I did.
You know,
that's why I said it.
Saved $100.
I thought he was playing it like a draw. It just felt like to me somebody would bet on that flop. They got a flush draw, they'd bet it. And I would. And then I would go all in if I had a chance to. I mean, a lot of people do that. They'll go all in on a flush draw. I felt like somebody, he wasn't the one doing the initial raising pre-flop. So he could be limping with connectors or whatever. And then when he hit his draw, he shoved on it. So it feels like somebody who's, if he's aggressive and he's a, you know, a draw kind of guy, that's how he would play it. I mean, that's why I wrote in my first note, was that it feels like this guy's on a draw. That's why I would call. So I thought it was a draw. Because why are you shoving if you've got King 10? Just to protect?
Well, when he shoves, absolutely. But what I'm saying is he didn't need to bet out on it. A lot of players in that situation wouldn't bet out on that draw. They would hope to, you know, keep the pot small. But he bet out, which I kind of like that move, because then it kind of disguises it. I usually think it is. Obviously, it wouldn't disguise it to you. But,
yeah, I always bet a draw. Know. I almost all, because then I get two chances.
I guess if we just call the raise, then it seems more like a draw. Obviously, shoving doesn't seem like a draw at that point. But I don't know. But bottom line, he just didn't pay attention to our
stack. Yeah, the stack size, right? That's right.
It's not going to go anywhere. Well, particularly when we raise there. Obviously, we have a hand, right?
No, sure, and that's the beauty of this game is that you can play these things so many different ways, and everybody can interpret things differently too, which is why it's always surprising when you're at the table with people, that's why these Hands of Weeks and these O'Malley's moves come up, because sometimes you just can't believe what you're seeing, and it prepares you for other things. And like you said, ultimately, it's, hey, pay attention to every facet of this game, including the stack size of somebody who can't fold, who's been dominating the table. And that's what this guy didn't do. So, but like I said, he wasn't going to get you to fold, and he didn't really care. He was going in on a draw anyway. He was semi-bluffing, so that's the best I can call it. But
this is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at anteupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes Store. And this comes from Brandon, and it's a 2-5 game, which is way above my pay grade. I think the only time I pay 2-5 is when I've been forced to. Or that's the only game at the casino, and I wanted to play. And all right, I'll play 2-5, but you're not going to find me in 2-5 games very often. So,
okay.
We'll see how helpful I can be here.
We'll see.
All right. Let's see. Actually, he has some fun stuff to say about us as well, too. So let me start with that. He says, I do enjoy listening to your program and get quite a bit out of it. I don't always agree with your hand analysis. Well, actually, I rarely agree, which makes them just like everybody else, right?
All right.
But I find that I get more out of it than most hand analysis. That helps me to understand how a more casual player might be interpreting a situation, because I hope that doesn't come off too pompous. I love that your show is light and fun yet relevant. You guys seem like guys I'd like to have a beer with.
Well, not me.
Beer with me, not Chris.
Root beer with me.
Tall glass of milk for Chris. But no, I run back. I'm like, that's absolutely not pompous. That's, hey, we've never pretended to be anybody that we're not, right?
No way. No way.
Two guys that like to play poker. So
it's right in the intro.
Millions of people out there that know how to play poker better than us. So.
Yep, it's right in the intro.
And I'd like to think Brandon's one of them, so it's going to be interesting to see where we go with this. So, all right. So he says, obviously, it's a 2-5 game at a casino. A game has a $1,000 cap buy-in and cash behind plays if it's $100 bills. It's another game I've never played where more than one $100 bill on the table.
Yeah.
All right, so it gives me a lot of information at a time, but I think we'll just jump right into the hands and go from there. All right. The villain has around 4,000. Our hero has around 3,500. I think my first 7 cars I could have bought total with those stack sizes. And these guys are just playing poker with it. That's wonderful. Great. So he says, I'm starting to get a read on the villain here. Nothing concrete, but it seems the body language is indicative of his hand strength, or maybe not, but something is there. The villain is in a middle position 1. It folds to him, and he opens for $50, as he does about every other hand. We are 2 players later, and we have the ace of hearts, 7 of clubs. And what do we do?
It's a 2-5 game, and it plays much more psychological than I think a 1-3 or a 1-2 game plays. We're not getting into the higher levels of, 10-20 in the limit or something, but I'm just saying that at 2-5, people are starting to play differently than the level that you're used to as a 1-2 or even a 50-cent, $1 game, things like that, or home games. So, the fact that this guy raised for 50 right now, since he said he's getting a bead on him, to me that could mean anything. So if to him raising the 50 every other hand isn't an indication of what the hand's strength is because he's just doing randomness, like looking at his watch or something, then really, if I'm playing the person, the hand doesn't matter.
Very good point.
That's what I'm talking about. If we're talking 1-2 and a lot of times, and you got Granny in seat 5 and she's making a raise, you got to give that some respect. But here, if you just think that you cannot play this guy and you have position on him, then the hand really doesn't matter. So if you feel like mixing it up with this guy, I'd re-raise him. I would never call with A7. If I'm going to play the hand, I'm gonna play the person and then just represent. And then if that doesn't work, I'm going to try to look for something on this guy that he either doesn't believe me or that his body language is telling me that he's hit this hard or that he started hard. I don't know. But the fact that, you know, A7 offsuit means nothing. Normally, I would just fold it if we're playing 1-2 or 1-3 because it's, you know, I'm playing against somebody who made it 10 times the big blind. You know, they may have a small pair or something, they want to protect it, or they may just be scared to play a hand, so they want to make sure they're isolated, so they probably have a big hand they don't want to get sucked out on. My A7 is not going to do that in any of these cases, so I'm probably going to fold it. But here, if I'm going to play it, I'm going to play it for a raise. I'm probably going to make it, I don't know, 150. I don't like calling. I mean, I like to call and have position on them, but the cards aren't going to matter if I call a position. I'm just going to play the person after that. So I wouldn't like to call. I'd probably 3-bet if I'm going to play this hand, but I guess I could call. Generally, I would just fold this hand and move on. I mean, are you looking at that money in the middle saying, I really have to have that $50? Am I going to felt this guy with A7? You know, I mean, am I going to play him later on? Is he the type of guy that folds later? All these things are going through my head, making my decision of whether or not I'm going to play this hand. I don't know anything about this guy, so generally I would just fold this hand. Not because it's A7, but because do I really want to get into this hand? Well, I still have people behind me to act, too, who might now repop it, and I've got A7. So I like to be a little bit later in the, you know, like at least the, you know, the cutoff or the button for this hand to just play the person, but whatever. I really don't know what to say except that I would probably either re-raise or fold. I don't think I would call.
Yeah, I think this definitely illustrates the difference between 1-2 and 2-5, because in a 1-2 game, you know, you wouldn't even be talking about this hand at this point.
Right.
This is just a terrible hand to call or raise or anything with in 1-2, because you can play ABC and be profitable there. So 2-5, obviously, you have to mix it up a little bit more. So, again, it's not a game that I'm comfortable with, so I wouldn't want to raise here, but I think you're right. I think if you're going to play here, you got to play for a raise.
Yeah. I mean, again, a call to me means you have to hope it really folds around. Because if someone, this is a perfect way to squeeze you out, for, and it's dead money right there, $50, your call. You know what I mean? So if somebody now makes it, I don't know, 200, 250, you're going to call that with A7 on a position against somebody who obviously has either a bigger hand or knows the fact that he can squeeze you. You know, you're going to be out of position for that guy? I don't think so. And then the bet's going to be 1,000 on the flop. You know, I mean, really, with A7, you're going to go to battle? So I'm going to want to re-raise and scare everybody out and then go heads up with this guy, or maybe even get him to fold anyway. And then if not, then I got my answer. But I certainly don't want to face a squeeze situation either, which happens a lot in these games. So, sure. I don't know. I'm a folding or re-raising. That's all I'm doing. Or, yeah, re-raising.
All right. Our hero says, in this position and with this particular holding, I give some thought to 3-betting, mostly just to isolate. I don't want anyone coming in behind with a better ace. Then it would get real tricky if an ace flops. I'm sure I could fold out ace-jack or worse, or smaller pairs with a 3-bet, but I also don't want to reopen the action to villain, as he is extremely unpredictable. In the situation, my hand has too much value to raise fold. Plus, I don't want to show any strength, as villain has shown he is capable of bluffing off a lot of money if he thinks he has any chance to get a fold.
That's kind of... Is that contradictory to me, or... You don't want to show strength because he's capable of bluffing me off? Why would he? I don't understand that. That's kind of contradictory to me, isn't it? So he's saying he'll bluff off a lot of... I get you now. So now he's saying he'll bluff a lot of money if he thinks we're weak and we can call him with a big hand. Okay, I get what he's saying now. I thought he was saying if we're showing strength, he might bluff at us. That didn't make sense. Okay, but now I see what he's saying. All right. I guess. I mean, again, the call, I think his first instinct was pretty good to want to isolate. I don't know how crazy this guy's going to get. You know, he's not going to believe you. It's just not like you're in position. You know, it'd be one thing he wouldn't believe if you're on the button and he knows that you're going to be the last to act and whatever. But if you in middle position three, if you're making it three bets to go, you know, it feels like, you know, or three betting, it feels like that's a place where you actually do have strength. Because... You know, it's one thing to just do it on the button because you know all you have are the blinds behind you and you're going to have position. You're just going to call this guy. But, you know, a 3-betting to get him to fold. But in here, it feels like you really have a hand if you 3-bet here. So, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I agree. Maybe I don't. It's hand of the week.
All right. Well, here does call and the action folds around.
Oh, it's fortuitous.
So we are heads up to a flop of jack of clubs. 7 of hearts, four of diamonds, and the villain bets 300.
Hmm. That's a pretty big bet.
Yeah, it's way more than the pot.
Three times the pot. Wow. That's interesting. Oh, man. Well, like you said, he could be holding anything, because now we're finding out he's actually crazy or whatever. So, man, middle pair. I mean, he could totally have eights and have us crushed. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the thing. I don't know. I mean, again, it's one of those things where either you're going to go with it and you're going to whatever. I mean, I might call because I don't believe him, but that's a huge... I mean, that's 10% of your stack, essentially, on a call. I don't know. I might call and see what he does in a turn. It's kind of a float, but you actually have something. I mean, you have middle pair, and you have the best kicker. I don't know if he'd have a 7 in his hand. He might. You never know. But, I mean, there are a lot of hands that he could have that beat us, too, the way he's played it. He could easily have 8s. He could easily have a jack in his hand. He'd have jack 10. You know, I mean, it's... I don't know. It could be ace jack. You know, it could be crushed at this point. I don't know. 300 is pretty steep. That's a big bet to call with middle pair. That's a big bet to make into that pot. It's, I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, it's a very interesting bet, and I guess we need no more history on him to figure out what exactly that means.
Yeah, it's tough.
But yeah, so if you raise here, I mean, we're already at 10% of our stack, right? So if we raise now, what, we have to raise to
900 or 1,000, which is 30% of your stack.
Yeah, exactly. So at that point, now you're making this hand very expensive. And, you know, if you did have something, you know, because crazy idiots have good hands from time to time, too, right? You know,
sure, that's what makes them hands effective.
Just as often as we do. So, I mean, if you guess wrong here and he has an ace jack or something like that, then you're in real trouble. If you just call here, it seems like you can't fold here either because we got a piece of this. This is why we're playing it.
Right.
And if you call here, doesn't seem like this is the type of guy. Again, you go back to the 1-2. If the guy doesn't have anything and you call here, then he might check the turn. And now we got a free card, or we can take control of the hand. We got a lot of options there, but. This doesn't sound like this guy is the type that ever checks, right?
Right.
So if we call here, then we're almost certainly going to face another bet on the turn, and we don't have any more information, right? So it's a lot of talk for me not really having an idea what to do here, but...
I don't know. It just seems to me that we could be in a better situation. It's not that I'm afraid to play poker with middle pair. It just seems to me that there are hands that I can put him on that would have played it the way he's played it right up to now perfectly, the way he's played it. And except maybe ace-jack, because there's really no hand to protect against here. So I don't know why he would need to bet so much if he had ace-jack or even jack-10. Right. So maybe he is protecting a hand, you know, like eights or nines or something like that. Or, you know, maybe he has the same hand as us, ace-7. You know, who knows? This guy is a maniac. He could have anything. So... if he had a set, I don't think he'd bet that much. He didn't want to scare us off. So maybe he is bluffing. That is a pretty big bet to have for a hand that's beating us, other than maybe eights or nines. That's the hand I'm afraid of right now. And maybe the same hand as us, like a suited A7 or something. But other than that, it's tough to put him on a hand that makes sense for a $300 bet. Nothing would warrant a $300 bet there unless he's just crazy. He likes throwing money around. He's got $4,000 to start, so... That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. That's three times a pot. You know?
Wow. All right, here says, uh-oh. It's always better if they say rut-row, though, right? Kind of tell the appropriate age where they use a rut-row.
Yeah.
You know, they grew up like us on Scooby-Doo, right? All right, anyhow. Uh-oh. This is a situation I knew I would arrive at eventually. I'm marginal holding against a very aggressive, borderline insane player. What's the play here? He says, you know the thing I said about my read on him? Well, I don't know if I actually read that, but...
Okay.
But he says, well, in this case, he doesn't seem real comfortable with his hand. However, I'm holding a pair of sevens, and neither am I. So that goes in the for what it's worth department. We're playing very deep, and I don't see any advantage to raising here, and a fold doesn't seem prudent either, so I call.
I don't agree with the raise either. I don't really think I'm going to raise here. I mean, again, unless we're playing the person, which is what we talked about earlier, and if he seems he doesn't seem real comfortable with his hand, is what he said, right? He doesn't seem real comfortable. So he's not comfortable with the hand. If you're playing the person, you want to do exactly what the opposite of what he wants you to do. So if he's not comfortable, he wants you to fold. You know what I mean? He doesn't want you to play this hand. I guess a call is not what he wants, but if he's a crazy, insane player, like he said, then, you know, he may just keep betting, you know, and then you got to keep putting yourself in the same position. So, I don't know, maybe your raise would be right if he's uncomfortable. If he's uncomfortable and we think we're ahead, right?
Yeah, again, this is above my pay grade, so, but yeah, I got to wonder, too, if the guy doesn't seem comfortable with his hand, then wouldn't you want to raise here? Because our hand isn't great either, as we pointed out, right? So if it seems like he's not comfortable with him, this might be a situation where a raise gets him to fold, and then we don't have to worry about making another tough decision on the turn, which will probably be followed by another tough decision on the river.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I was getting at,
I mean,
too.
A call seems to be the safe route to go because, yeah, you're right, you don't want to fold. If he's not comfortable with his hand and we've got something here, then we don't want to fold. But a call, I guess, you know, as you said, I guess that shows him, hey, we're still in this pot as well, too. But, again, I just don't see this guy checking the turn, whether he's comfortable with his hand or not. So we're going to face another bet. But if he's really not that comfortable, then a raise is going to make him either fold or do something that he's even less comfortable with, which is raise more.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a raise, again, if you're going to raise, that's why you're doing it, because you're playing the player. Your sevens mean nothing, though, because you're really just catching a bluff either way, so you're playing the player. So, yeah, I mean, if you think that he really is truly uncomfortable, then a raise would definitely, because you're right, because you don't know what the turn's going to bring now. So if you just call, you're giving him his price at seeing a card that's going to outdraw you, and then he's going to go to the mat with it if he hits his, you know, I don't know. I don't know what he has, so it's hard to say. But let's say he had king queen and he was bluffing, but now he hits his king or his queen in the turn. Now he's going to go to the mat with it, and you're screwed, and you just lost 300 because you weren't willing to raise it to 900 or 800 or something. So I don't know. I mean, a raise. I'm not real happy with a pair of sevens either. But again, I wasn't. If I'm playing it from the beginning, we go back to the beginning. We're playing the person. Then I'm not even caring about what my cards are, and it's only a fallback. Right. So I could see raising. I can see folding, and I can see calling. So this is tough. if I'm going with my gut, you know, if we're in a tournament, let's say it's a tournament. I know it's a cash game. It's a tournament, though, and you had 3,500 chips in front of you, and somebody bets 300 chips, and you have a pair of sevens, I think you're calling. So there's one way to look at it. And if money isn't anything, it's just tools for your trade, you're not thinking about $300 because this is what you always play at, then I might consider raising here. I might call or raise. So I don't think I'm folding, but, you know, for what we're used to playing, I play 2-5 once in a while, but I generally just play pretty straightforward ABC stuff and just try to get in some good hands and then get out. But I think a raise is a good play, too, if we're playing it that way. If we're playing the cards and we're thinking that, you know, this guy might have, like, sixes or something, and we think we're a little bit ahead, I might call it a turn and then put the hammer down. So I guess I'll call. I don't know. I guess I'll call.
Yeah, I don't think I can defend a fold here, but a call or raise would be the way to go. So the guy obviously plays this more often, so he's going to call. And then, hey, we'll go with the call.
Right.
All right, the turn is the Jack of Diamonds. So our board now is Jack of Clubs, Seven of Hearts, Four of Diamonds, Jack of Diamonds.
I like that card.
Pot's now around $700, and the villain bets $800.
Yeah, I think I like that card, because if he had the Jack, one, I don't think he would have played it the way he did up to this point. Two, this only, I think, ensures that he doesn't have a jack. So we're still only afraid of really eights or nine, something like that. I don't think he has. I mean, he could have an overpair, but why would he bet 300 if he had an overpair? You know, he just bet something a little more in line with normal betting. And if he had that, would he really bet 10 times the big blind preflop, you know, with aces or something?
Right.
So I think I like that card. I don't think that gives him three jacks. I think he would have bet normally with that jack, because he's not really protecting anything. He doesn't have to. There's nothing. There was no draw except for 9-10, you know, or 8-9, and that's only a gutter. So, I kind of like the Jack. I think that it means that it more likely that he definitely doesn't have one. He doesn't have Jack 10 or something like that. So, you know, and it also, when people see a parrot like that, they like to bet it, thinking that, oh, you're going to be scared that I have it, but the story doesn't add up that you do have it. So if he's bluffing at it, which he might do, a lot of people do that, you know, that makes me happy because it's more money for me if I truly have a good read on that he's uncomfortable and he doesn't really have anything. So, but I might actually decide to put the hammer down here too. You said he bet how much? 800?
800, yep.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like the type of guy that will just keep bluffing at it. The problem is the river, you know.
See, that's what I like about this now. I totally agree. I think the Jack was a good card for us.
Right.
And he's still betting it. So at this point, I don't see a need to poke the bear in case we're wrong. He's going to keep bluffing. He's going to bluff. If we think he's bluffing right now at 800, I bet, then he's probably going to bluff again on the river. And that's going to be a pretty nice pot. And we don't get overextended if we're wrong on our read.
Yeah, yeah, call, because that's a pretty nice size bet. It's weird. He keeps betting more than the pot, which is weird. But that's also a sign of somebody that really doesn't want you around. There is a draw now. I'm not saying that, you know, another draw. I mean, there's two diamonds. Right, yeah. So he could be backdooring into another diamond. But even then, would he really want to bet so much the pot? If he's on a draw, too. I mean, I guess so, because he's got all these outs now, maybe. But I can't be afraid of that. A call, and then a very careful river. You know, if another diamond comes in the river, I'll be nervous. If another straight card gets there, I might be a little nervous. But I think a call is probably in order here.
Okay. All right. Our hero says, loving this card, I think. And then after the bet, yeah, I still think I like this card. What do I do? He is bluffing that board a large percentage of the time, has a jack a small percentage of the time, and has a bigger wired pair a small percentage of the time. I mean, even the most aggressive players make hands sometimes. I'm only losing 350 if I fold, and I could wait for a better situation, but folding seems like the wrong answer, as I should be ahead of most of his range, which could honestly be anything. If I raise, I only get called by better hands. Although, believe it or not, I might get called by ace high here in this particular spot. But I think raising is out of the question. If he turned a diamond draw or some sort of combo draw, I guess I'm just going to let him draw. I think a call is best here, knowing I may be inducing a massive bluff on the river. So if I call here, am I effectively saying I'm ready to go to the felt with a pair of sevens? I guess so. So I call.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's right when it comes to the stuff in the beginning, small percentage of a, you know, of a bigger wired pair. When he means bigger, does he mean bigger than the jacks or bigger than the sevens? I think he could have eights a little more often than small percentage, but the other stuff, I totally agree with all that. A jack is so out of my mind now that there's just no way he has a jack here the way he played it. And then the fact that another one came, you know, it makes it less likely. So I think he's right. I think that at this point, unless something really scary comes on the end and this guy shoves, you know, even then, I shove. You got to really, if it's just a regular old piece of, you know, garbage blank, then I think I am going to the mat with this now, because I'm going to put all this money into fold. You know, it has to be something that I'm really getting a vibe from this guy. And since I got the vibe that he wasn't comfortable from the beginning, I don't think I'm going anywhere unless it's an absolute scare card. And even then, I'm not sure I'll go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the river is the tray of spades. It's our final board, jack of clubs, seven of hearts, four of diamonds, jack of diamonds, tray of spades. So a straight does get there. The villain moves all in.
Could you put him on 5-6 there? I don't know.
You know, I think I could. Here's the thing. This is why I keep telling people about these maniacs, is that it's very hard to put them on hands because they play every hand, and they play every hand weird, but again, they get good hands the same amount of time that we get good hands, so these kind of people, we talked about at the beginning that, you know, we're playing the player, not the cards in this situation. Well, these type of maniacs do the same thing, you know, they're not really concerned what their cards are. But if they get a situation where, let's say you add 5-6 here, it's almost a dream flop for you, right? And now you're definitely a dream river at this point. but you would still be making all these crazy bets even if you didn't have it. It's just an insurance policy for you. So I'm certainly not putting 5-6 out of his range, but I'm also not completely scared that that's what he has.
Right, and that's
actually very little scared that he has that. But I would not be shocked if he turned it over.
The fact that he calls him an insane player, an aggressive player, and all this stuff, then, I mean, I just don't know if he would really, in middle position one, make it 50 to go with 5-6. Maybe, I guess he would, but, you know, some guys do that, and that's the way they play. They don't play their cards, they play the people. But when you're in middle position one, you know, 5-6, I mean, I guess he could get away with that. But that's like, it's like almost the nuts here. You know what I mean? And you're scared of the nuts with this, and it doesn't seem like that's what you've been doing all along. And if he was uncomfortable, I don't think he'd be uncomfortable with an open and a straight draw, especially if he had something like 5-6 of diamonds, where now he's picked up a flush draw and a straight draw on the river. So I'm going to rule out 5-6 just because of the fact that we got that vibe that he was borderline, you know, uncomfortable or whatever. So
that's a good point. I mean, if you're a maniac here, that 5-6, like I said, you're pretty excited about that flop. So
yeah.
Even though it's a draw, still at that point, but it's an insurance policy. So yeah, I don't think if I'm that player, I become uncomfortable with 5-6. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that I don't know. Did we say what he did yet? I don't think we said that yet.
The villain moved all in. So
oh, he went all in. Yeah, of course he did. Oh, geez, that's a lot of money. But it sounds like desperation, too. I mean, really, let me ask you. If I realize that the pot is probably another pot-sized bet there because we have, what, 600 and the 100, so 700. And then, let me see, you bet 8 and we called, so that's 16. So, yeah, that's basically a pot-sized bet, which is what he's been doing all along anyway. So it doesn't necessarily mean anything that he shoved. You know what I mean? He's been betting pot everywhere pretty much the whole way, or more than pot. So, but if you had it's not the nuts, because it's not. But I mean, if you had what the only straight that really makes, you know, if you had a straight there, aren't you going to try to get, you know, a value bet in instead of trying? I mean,
it's probably a value bet in his mind, right?
A pot size bet.
And he bet like 6 times the pot on the flop and then a little bit over the pot on the turn. So, I mean.
Right, but he slowed down, essentially.
It's almost weirder to go less than all in here, I think, the way he's been betting.
The reason why I say that is because he went from 3 times the pot to the pot. So it would make sense to go less than pot now, because he's gradually, because the pot's so big, he's actually gradually less, right? So it just seems so weird to just shove now, unless he is afraid of a call. I mean, to me, I would bet like 1,200 now, if I had the nuts, or whatever, the straight. So 2,300 might be a reason to think you don't have me beat, you know, or you got something small. Again, I'm scared of the eights, but I don't know. I'm scared of the eights, but we could be ahead. I don't think I can go away now. I mean, it's just, if he was uncomfortable, then none of these cards scare me. And we were ahead from the beginning, so why, you know what I mean? If we're uncomfortable and we think, if he's uncomfortable, I mean, and we think we were beating him earlier, then you got to go to the mat. He even said that. He said, if I'm calling here, I'm ready to go felt, so you got to call.
Well, I'll tell you, this hand illustrates why I really am never comfortable playing no limit hold'em. Uh-huh. Because now we're at a situation here where we're playing for our entire stack with pair of sevens.
Right.
And we can make all kinds of cases for being well ahead of this guy. We can make all kinds of cases for being behind him. We really have no idea, I think. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. We kept calling.
Now we're playing for our stacks with no idea, and that's generally, that's a really bad way to play it, isn't it? And I don't think that's how you play one of these maniacs. I think, you know, you can't wait till you have the nuts with them, because you can bleed you dry at that point. But I usually want something better than a pair of sevens here to put my stack in. All that being said, I still feel like I'm ahead here, so I guess I'm going to make the call. But it's just, this is why I don't like No Limit Hold'em, because $4,000 in on pair of sevens.
Yeah.
When I think I'm ahead, but I don't know.
Limit
game, you know, would be different story.
I know that Devo says, you know, don't ever race for information. That's stupid. But really, I mean, at this point, this is why you're confused right now, because you've never, ever showed any aggression here. and you're like, I don't know what this guy has. I have no clue. All I do is sit here and call the whole way down, and calling poker a lot of times is losing poker. So would you
raise
somewhere?
The other point here is raising doesn't really help you either, I don't think, because this guy could re-raise with anything. So, I mean, this is why I get it from the table when these maniacs are there. You can't do it in a tournament, but it's a cash game. They put you in these spots that are just tough.
Right, but if you're playing the person, right, like we talked about earlier, if we went that route, the minute we saw he was uncomfortable, should we have raised on that flop and gotten instead of this $2,300 bet here and the $800 bet earlier? You know, we could have just made it $800 when he made it $300 and taken it down and not put ourselves in this position.
If we're also following the logic we used there, was that if he feels uncomfortable, we'll call and let him keep walking the dog. So at this point, I guess I shouldn't be concerned about his all-in, because this is essentially what we want him to do back on the flop. So, but again, when you play it back now, I'm like, oh my gosh, I got $4,000 in this pot.
Yeah, you got 35. You're basically going all in for a pair of sevens with best kicker, but that doesn't mean anything.
The way we played it, it seems really weak to fold at this point. I think I got to make this call.
Yeah, especially since going into the river, we knew we were making the call. So.
Not comfortable with it at all.
Yeah, but we knew we were going to call McCall anyway, so that $2,300 means nothing, I guess. So we knew we were going to call it anyway, so it's just the fact that it's there now. Now you have to do it. It takes a lot of gumption.
Yeah. all right, so our hero says, when the river came out, it said, seems pretty innocuous. Innocuous. And after the bet, doesn't seem so now, right? And he says, I don't think that card hit him. Not 100% sure he needed it, though, either. I didn't want a diamond, however unlikely that might have been. It would have just muddied the water. Same could be said for any card 10 or better, so I guess that was exactly the card I wanted. I think I'm calling. Let me think about this for a minute. Yeah, I call for about $2,300.
Yeah.
Again, tables.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. I want to know.
You had a thought.
Well, I'm just saying. Again, he said earlier he was going to the mat with it if a blank came and a blank came. So there really was no thought there. It's just. And again, if you're thinking about this as this is not my, you know, this is my tools. These are not my, you know, my car payments and mortgages. This is right now. These are the tools of the trade, and I got to do what I got to do. I got to go with my gut that he's uncomfortable, that he's a maniac, and I actually have a pair of sevens, and the pot's too big to fold. I'm going with it. So, yeah, I think even though he had to think about it for a second, I think he did the right thing. He has to call there.
All right. Villain tables, the seven of diamonds, king of diamonds.
Oh, wow. Well, the ace of diamonds, the ace of, what do you have, ace of hearts? Ace of hearts, yeah, I guess that did mean something after all. Holy cow. Wow, king seven. Wow, $50 preflop, but king seven suited. Yeah, that makes sense for 2-5.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any difference. So you go back to the 5-6, the guy's going to make that $50 bet with anything. So.
Yeah, with anything.
Very difficult to put them on anything. So our hero says, I'm pretty sure I would have called here if it had been a diamond or a 10 or higher, including a king that beats me. Probably would have been a bit tougher, but bearing any major tells from this guy, I would have paid him off if he had made a better hand. Fortunately for me, he didn't.
Yeah, the only, you know, and again, I don't fault him for any of this, because obviously, one, he's a better player than I am, but the only hand that I was worried about really was eights. I really was. I was really worried that this guy looked down at eight, said, you know what? I don't want loose players like our buddy here to just call me with any old... So I'm going to at least make it 10 times a big blind. But then he did say he does it every other hand. But even so, eights would have played it a lot like this, given who he was. And eights would have been a little bit uncomfortable with that jack. Eights would have been a little uncomfortable with a call. Eights would have been betting that much to bluff at that jack when it came on the turn. And then eights would have shoved because they were hoping that you would finally believe him in the end because he was vulnerable. And so I think eights would have played it the same way. That's the only hesitation I had with this throughout the whole thing was eights or nines, something like that.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know.
Yep, this is why I don't play No Limit. And definitely don't play No Limit with the Maniacs. So,
and I tell you...
I don't have the 42. And I can be honest about that. And... not worry about it.
it's the exact reason why I do play it, because I want my heart rate otherwise, why am I sitting down? I mean, I understand, you know, you sit down and have fun, and you sit down to be social, and but when we're playing Limit, which I love to play, don't get me wrong, how many times do I beg people to sit down and play Ho with us, or play Stud 8, or even Limit Hold'em? I'll play Limit Hold'em if it's big enough. But I never, ever, 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 ever have my heart race at all when I play Limit anything. Even if it's, you know, oh man, $24 on the river, you know, it's, you know what I mean? But when you're playing No Limit Hold'em, I just feel alive when I'm playing that game. And
right,
here,
I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, my heart would have been racing here, but I think I still make that call and then hope I'm right, you know, hope my reading skills were correct. And yeah, I know what you're saying, though. That's why when I play No Limit Hold'em, I looked at the money that I'm bringing and I say, hey, I can afford to lose this. This is my entertainment. Now do the right thing. And that's how I play it. And then right, my heart still races, but it's more of exciting than, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh, there goes my car payment, or there goes the new tires I had to buy for my car when I came out of the cruise and found out my car had a flat tire. You know, I don't think like that. You know, I just think I got to do what I got to do. But I hope we did all right by him. I hope he respected our analysis this time. Thanks for sending it in. I'm Chris Cosenza.
Absolutely. And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.